Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, I'm guessing a large percentage of our listeners went out and got themselves something tasty from Chick-fil-A. And if they weren't hungry when they got in line, I'm guessing they were pretty darn hungry by the time they finally got to the counter. Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. I think most of you know the backstory. The owner of Chick-fil-A was interviewed on a Christian radio show, talked about his defense of traditional marriage. Mayors like Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, Menino in Boston, Lee in San Francisco, even the scandal-plagued Vincent Gray in Washington, D.C. decided to weigh in, saying that with those values, we don't want them anywhere near our city. We certainly don't want them expanding in our city. And so the counter protest was on. Wednesday was the appreciation day. And all over Facebook and Twitter, there were pictures of these extremely long lines at the counter, the drive-through lanes going back sometimes a quarter or half a mile. And Jim, obviously, the Chick-fil-A aspect of this debate will probably fade away in time. But the good news here certainly is, and you actually did research on this in your local community to go check out the lines, is that people on the conservative side certainly seem motivated to show up, which in a year divisible by four is a good thing.
Yeah, Greg. So the nearest Chick-fil-A to me, and really one of the only ones that's really in my neck of the woods, is in a shopping mall that has very much seen better days. Wondering how the turnout was in what strikes me as a very blue part of Virginia and not really one you'd expect to see a big rallying to the aid of Chick-fil-A. Landmark Mall had a line just throughout the food court, probably 50 to 100 people in the middle of lunchtime. These were not normal mall goers. As I said, there are a lot of days this mall seems like it's abandoned. And that was the story. You know, it looks like coast to coast. They said, you know, I'd like to see specific numbers, but you're hearing anecdotally, Chick-fil-A had told its franchisees to expect a modest increase yesterday for Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day, 15 to 20%. And some places were reporting, 200% increase in sales. Some restaurants were running out of food. Apparently at the Paramus, New Jersey one, there were 90-minute waits for service at these places. Greg, I don't know about you. 90 minutes is just too much for me to wait for a chicken sandwich myself. You know, I believe in freedom of speech, but, you know, not when I'm hungry. So. The interesting thing here, one, I think it shows there's an enormous amount of pent-up grassroots energy on the right. And the interesting thing is I'm not so sure how much this is. Everyone who's standing online yesterday is saying, I absolutely stand with the owner and chief operating officer of Chick-fil-A and their views on gay marriage. I think the bigger deal is we don't want mayors deciding who can open up businesses in their communities based on whether or not they agree with the mayor's policies. Rahm Emanuel of Chicago said this. Apparently, Vincent Gray in D.C., very upset. Chick-fil-A was not willing to get with the traditional D.C. system of bribery. That's the D.C. way of under Vincent Gray. And then up in Boston, Thomas Menino. Ironically, it was Mike Bloomberg who said that, you know, look, we shouldn't be instituting bans on businesses based on their political views. I guess as long as their sodas are small enough, Mike Bloomberg has no particular problem with them. So it's a very interesting. I think there was kind of this very strange outpouring of I don't know whether you'd say outrage, but it wasn't really angry crowds. But maybe there's also another lesson to take from this, which is that this is the ideal protest form for the right and for folks, because you don't have to take time off. You don't have to leave work. It doesn't interfere with childcare or anything. Everyone needs to have lunch. And so you're going, and of course, it's catered. It's really good food. If Chick-fil-A did not have good chicken sandwiches, nobody would want to eat there. So a couple of things kind of working in Chick-fil-A's advantage in this particular controversy. But I think it says something that this is not just a gay marriage debate or something like that. It very much is runaway government power and these little, you know, fascist dictator mentality among certain mayors. And I use that term not casually. I mean, basically the idea that you have to agree with local government in order to operate a business is completely un-American. And it's great to see a great backlash against this. And it'll be interesting to see if any of these mayors understand that they've not attempting a pun here, bitten off a lot more than they can chew.
Absolutely right. On to martini number two now. And the president, according to Reuters and a couple other sources, has signed a secret order authorizing U.S. support for rebels seeking to depose Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his government, according to U.S. sources familiar with the matter. Obama's order, approved earlier this year and known as intelligence finding, broadly permits the CIA and other U.S. agencies to provide support that could help the rebels oust Assad. There had been some other reports that I don't know if they've been verified, Jim, that suggested U.S. troops may be near the border. No idea if that's true, so I'm not going to elaborate much on that. But first of all, I find it fascinating that once again a secret is well publicized from this administration. And secondly, you're going to have more people wondering whether this is a replay of Libya and some other issues where the president's deciding exactly where the U.S. ought to go without any sort of authorization from another branch of the government, namely Congress.
Yeah, Syria is one of those circumstances in which I will cut the Obama administration a few molecules of slack. This is a messy, complicated situation in which there aren't really a lot of easy answers. Clearly, the Assad regime is no friend of America and, in fact, is one we kind of like to see replaced. The Syrian rebels are a combination of good folks who want to see a democratic or more Western-oriented government, and there are a whole bunch of bad people in there. There are Islamists, and Al-Qaeda has said that they are participating and all that stuff. And differentiating between the good rebels and the bad rebels is a very difficult task. And so the idea that we're going to be stepping in and providing any type of combat aid as opposed to the traditional humanitarian relief to help all the people who are being hurt in what is apparently just unbelievably intense violence over there, a little unnerving. The fact that we're hearing about this is also unnerving, since this is, if it was a secret program, it's not secret anymore. And so once again, the whole idea of the White House leaking, we don't know who leaked this information, but it certainly is unnerving to see that, you know, any secret program doesn't remain secret for very long. And whether there will be some sort of negative consequence to helping these rebels. Boy, I hope we're only helping the right guys, and I hope that whatever replaces Assad, since it looks like his regime is crumbling a bit day by day, I hope that whatever replaces it is an improvement from our point of view. But that certainly doesn't look terribly likely, and it's not clear that putting a bunch of guns in the hands of people who oppose Assad is automatically going to make things better. This seems like a very risky policy on the part of the Obama administration. I suppose this is better than the stasis / relying on Kofi Annan to get everybody to talk it out. That clearly wasn't working as a policy either. But it's just easy to imagine a lot of ways that aiding the Syrian rebels could end up going quite badly for us.
Yeah, a situation in the Middle East that's turning out to be messy. No one could have seen that coming. On to martini number three now. And the crazy martini, kind of unintentionally, has largely been about different aspects of the Olympics this week. But we're going to give Boris Johnson a break today, so he should be happy about that. Turns out, I don't know if a lot of people knew this, Jim, I certainly didn't, that athletes, when they win medals, in addition to getting the gold, silver, or bronze, they get an honorarium. If you win a gold medal, you get a $25,000 honorarium, on down to $10,000 if you win a bronze. But then the government taxes you on that. For the $25,000 honorarium, it's an $8,986 tax bill, and then it goes down to about $3,500 for the honorarium for the bronze medal. And so now Marco Rubio of Florida is trying to pass legislation protecting the Olympians from having to pay the tax. Jim, this just doesn't seem all that right after all the time these people put into this without being paid to do so. My fear is that Michael Phelps is going to end up shilling for gold by having to, chip off his gold medals and send people an ounce of it.
I put all my money into gold because people keep handing it to me after swimming competitions. Yes. It is bizarre. I mean, on the one hand, if you're getting the honorarium, I suppose that is income, and I suppose that you technically would pay income taxes on that as much as anything else. I suppose we should be thankful the IRS isn't considering the medal a form of payment in and of itself, which is it just doesn't seem to sound right to say you've just worked your butt off for years to go out and make your country proud and to achieve something, in some cases set a world record. Now here's the bill. haven't they given enough? It does seem like a very strange thing to tax, a strange thing for the government to say, okay, now here's our we demand our cut of that. So I know some folks on the right aren't completely on board with this. Charles Cook is saying, well, there are certain forces who probably are more deserving of tax relief than Olympic athletes. But, I guess the attitude is, don't you think the Olympic athletes have earned a little bit of tax relief? Haven't they given enough in terms of sweat and blood and torn Achilles tendons and things like that? So just kind of shows you that, the appetite of our tax system is seemingly endless. And it hits the winners. In this case, maybe landing fourth is a bit of a nice thing.
It could be. Now,
you don't get a medal, but at least you don't have to come with any bill. And you can tell them, hey, I landed fourth in the Olympics, and I didn't deal with the tax bill that guy who won the bronze did.
I really feel bad for the people in kind of the lower profile sports. I mean, Michael Phelps and some of these other high profile, the gymnasts who did well, they're going to get Wheaties boxes and Subway ads and so forth. And so they're going to make plenty of endorsements where this bill won't be onerous. They still shouldn't have to pay it. But, you know, for folks who win in, you know, archery or something, that's not going to get them a ton of high profile gigs. And so this is just kind of a slap in the face for all the time they've put in. So good luck to Mr. Rubio. He's, in addition to exempting the honorarium, also the value of the medal itself. So you can see that Marco Rubio knows where this is headed if you only go after the honorarium. He's been around long enough to know that Democrats will go after whatever they can. So good luck to all the Olympians. Don't let this deter you from trying to actually win a medal over the next week and a half after all you've put in. The incentive, hopefully, is still there for you to actually bring one home. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.